get time off from school, right? Families travel different places on spring break. They visit relatives and go to memorable places. So when you go to a big place like an airport or a museum or amusement park, what's one of the first things you do as a family? Anybody have any ideas? Well, go to the bathroom, right? That's good. So those of us with larger families, like my own, we're worried that we might lose somebody, okay? So what we do is we set up a meetings point, a place in the event that someone would get separated from our group. It's a location where anybody who's lost would go and be found. The meeting spot is that place where they are reunited with you, okay? So different places have these. If you go to the frequently asked question web pages of places like Sesame Street, Six Flags, and Camel Beach, you'll see that they have on their FAQ pages ways to set up these meeting pods and even recommend. Camel Beach is a great one. They have a large stone camel that they recommend right in the heart of their park, and they explain how it's a perfect place to rendezvous in the event that somebody gets unintentionally separated. There's the camel, okay? Now today we're going to look at a story where, in the Bible, where Jesus is separated from his friends, but later that he reunites with them at the meeting point, as he promised he would do. As we saw in the video, it's the most familiar story in the Bible. It's the story of the resurrection. The account we're going to look at today is in the Gospel of Mark, where the angel tells a woman who came to Jesus' tomb to go to the meeting spot, meet up with him there, just like he said. As we look at this story, we're going to see how Jesus is always reliable. We've been talking these past couple months about Jesus is always this, always that, always the other one. Today, Jesus is always reliable. He's dependable, trustworthy, and he never fails. We're going to look at a few things that kind of make it hard for us to trust Jesus and to find out ways that we can learn to trust him more. So what we're going to do is we're going to just have a tour. I mentioned kind of being on vacation, so I'm going to do a little tour through these verses. We're going to look at each of the verses. We're going to stop after a couple verses. We're going to highlight a few things that are there. And then at the end, we're going to do some things. Now, before we start, the kids have some packets that I'd like the ushers to hand out. So any kid here who's basically likes to color, I have some coloring packets I want to hand out at this time before we get into the passage. I will warn you, though, there is a little bag of jelly beans that are meant for the end. So hold the bag of jelly beans, and there's a paper towel that goes with that. So parents, hold on to those jelly beans. Make sure they don't get eaten until the designated time. And parents, you might be able to do, there's enough jelly beans in there that parents could maybe have one too. So when we get to that point in the service, okay, this is the jelly bean point. This is not the jelly bean time, okay? This is the coloring time. Coloring time. Usually it should be enough for one for family, or if there's multiple people in your family you want to share, or you'll use it together. I think we have some more in the back, so please don't miss out, okay? Those adults who'd like to color, you can borrow the crayons if you find the message a little bit not to your liking. So we have packets available for everybody. And look, this is a family service, right? I mentioned that. So we're going to allow some of the chatter to go on. We're going to allow the kids to do their things. Be comfortable with that. Enjoy being together. That's what we're here for. Okay? So we're going to start our story in Mark chapter 16, verse 1. The first verse, we're introduced to the main characters and their intentions. It says, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Now these women, what they were trying to do is they were trying to express their love for Jesus. Because things had already been done, but they wanted to kind of finish the job and apply some more spices, either to show some honor to him and his body, or to actually maybe take off some of the stench or odor that had already started with his decaying body. And here's some of the spices that they might have taken with them. And then we move on to verse 2, and we kind of set the scene. It says, very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb. Now, what's interesting is, a little bit like you saw in the kids' video, these women were most likely at the cross, and they saw that Jesus' body was crucified. They saw it be wrapped up, they saw it be carried, and they saw it put in a tomb, and they most likely saw a stone put in front of that tomb. So those are all the things that they saw. And what's neat is we even see earlier in the previous chapter of Mark, in these few verses, Mark 15, 46, that the stone had been moved over and the tomb was sealed. And that kind of brings us to the next. Continuing on verses 3 and 4, we get to listen in to what they talked about on the way. What were they saying to each other? And they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? Verse 4 says, but when they looked up, they saw the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. They were talking among themselves. How are we going to take care of this? Who's going to help us? How are we going to move this stone out of the way? But what was neat is that, as we saw in the little video, God had sent an angel. That's what tradition holds, to go and remove the stone from the tomb. So when they show up at the tomb, the stone is rolled away, and we move on to verse 5 and see what they did. It says, as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. So instead of finding a tomb sealed with the body of Jesus inside, they find an angel. Now, finding an angel is not what they expected, and it says in the text that they were alarmed. Now, this alarm is more of a sense of amazement, like, oh my, can you believe what you just saw? Did you just see what I saw? Did you just see what, is that? They couldn't even speak. So how many of you have ever kind of had an experience where you're like, can you take a look at this? Take a look at what's happening, right? And in fact, it's the same term Mark uses in Mark 9:15 earlier, where he says, as the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder about all the miracles that he had done, and they ran to greet him. Now, what's neat about this angel encounter, we know we're familiar with the Gospels, and they kind of all blend together for us, but specifically in the Gospel of Mark, there is no appearances of angels to people. The only time angels show up in the Gospel of Mark is when Jesus was tempted in the wilderness with Satan, and angels came and ministered to him by his side. So they basically fortified him for the battle. And what's neat here is we see in the Gospel of Mark that when the angels show up, they get to show up and tell that the battle's been won. Satan has been defeated. He is risen. Now, we do see in some of the other gospel accounts, right, that angels would come. And we're going to see this here in verse 6 as I talk about what the angel said. It said, don't be overalarmed. Don't be alarmed, he said. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. As I mentioned, we do know the other gospel accounts. So what is the first gospel account where we see angels talking to people in the New Testament? They're talking to the shepherds, right? And they told the shepherds what? Don't be afraid. I bring you good tidings of great news. And so the same thing is happening here. Angels announce his birth, and angels now come and announce to people the resurrection. And they say, look, don't be afraid. Don't be alarmed. Okay? He has risen. Now again, what did I say earlier? What did the women expect to find? They brought their spices. They expected to find a dead body, right? Probably crucified, pierced, kind of stench, okay? But instead, the angel says what? Look, he draws their attention to the grave clothes. And he says, look over here at these grave clothes. He has risen to provide evidence of what he's doing. And the term that's used here is more of a look for yourself. How many people, when you hear somebody else tell you something, you have to see it for yourself? You're not quite sure. Okay, we have a few people like that here, right? You're not quite sure, okay? I know maybe you heard it wrong. Maybe you didn't understand what was said. I need to really see it for myself. And that's what's happening. And this is where I want to camp for a second, okay? We have this picture up here. Now, this is more of an artist rendition, maybe a little more pretty than it was. But I wonder, we get to see in this story what the women were told, and we also get to see what they saw. But two things we don't get from the scriptures here is what they felt, like with their hands, and what they smelled with their noses. So I just want you to go into this tomb with me for a second and think, if they bent down and started to feel these grave clothes, maybe how different they might have felt. This is conjecture, obviously. Do you think they were the same? Do you think they were dirty? Because we know what happened to Jesus' body, right? The scars were still there, but his body was clean. It was a resurrected body. And then from a smell perspective, the stench of the dead body, do you think it was still lingering there? Here you have an angel. What do you think? I mean, angels often, to me, like, they smell like babies, not like old people, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of, you ever walk into an old folks home, there's a certain just smell that's there. But you, with a baby, right, a newborn baby, there's just a sense of just, as they get out of the bath, you just want to eat them, right? I mean, that's how it is. And the same thing here, these candles, this vanilla, this scent, I think when you walked in the tomb, these women were overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed by what they heard. They were overwhelmed by what they saw. And he said, hey, come and look. They might have even felt the grave clothes. And then even what they smelled, their whole sensory experience was they were just overwhelmed by it. And that's what I want us to do. Think about what it was like. I'm even going to go forward in time for a second. What do you think it was like even to hug Jesus? What do you think he felt like? What do you think he smelled like? What do you think he, if you were going to touch him? This is what I want us to, so that's just what's happening to this woman. They had come thinking this guy was dead, and they just wanted to honor him and love him one more, just hold him one more time. But instead, they come and find out he's resurrected. So their whole lives are turned upside down. Now, we'll see in the remainder of verse 7 here, what did he say to them? He said, but go and tell the disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you. Now, the angels directed them to go. Go and tell people. Now, what's interesting is the angels told them to go and tell people what they had seen. But I think it was also what they had smelled, what they had touched, what they had felt. All these things that they experienced. And then what's neat is that he said, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. Now we've got the meeting spot. Go to Galilee. You will see him there. You will see him there. In fact, if you remember in Mark 14, just a little before here, is where Jesus told them, he said, but after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. Now, I just have a question for us. Why Galilee? He was raised right there in that area in Jerusalem. So why Galilee? Now, again, this is a little more on the conjecture side, but I surmise Galilee, he picked it for a few reasons. One is that they actually had to travel a bit of distance to get there. So you see here on our map, okay, Jerusalem's down in this area, to travel all the way up to Galilee. If you want to really see Jesus, you really had to have some faith that he existed and that he truly has been risen from the dead. The second one is that Galilee is where he was raised. It's his hometown. As a child, his youth, his disciples, many of them were from there. He had a lot of positive associations with this area. It was kind of like a homecoming. When you go back to your school or whatever and you have those homecoming weekends, it was homecoming. He was coming back to see these people that he had spent so much time with and just live life deeply together with. And we've been looking at that. In fact, most of the time that he spent in that area, we looked at today, this past 3 months, in Mark chapter 3, Mark chapter 4, and Mark chapter 5. Different sections that went on here in this area of Galilee. The last thing I want to highlight before we kind of wrap up, we have one more verse, but is that what's interesting is that women were the one who got to hear the message of the angel first. They were the ones who loved him deeply and came. And I find just a little the way that God works is that if you think back to Genesis chapter 3, right? Satan was giving some words to a woman to twist her and try to destroy her life, right? He said, did God really say you must not eat from this tree in the garden? You will not certainly die. And I thought it's beautiful here in Mark 16 how an angel talks to women and tells them that there you will see him just as he told you. And how the promise of the resurrection, the redemption from sin, is first shared with them. And they get to share it with others. As eternal death came by a woman's choice not to follow after God, so eternal life and resurrection are first announced to these women. So let's finish out in verse 8. It says, trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled the tomb. From the tomb, they said nothing to anyone because they were so afraid. Now, there's various adjectives that we see here in this verse about these women. Alarmed in the previous verse, trembling, bewildered, afraid. Now, what's neat is the same idea here, this idea of bewilderment experience we see in Luke chapter 5, where Jesus hears a paralyzed man. And what's the second thing he does for that man? Doesn't just heal him. What does he do? Yes? Forgives him of his sin. After he forgave him of the sin, Luke uses the term bewildered or amazed. So this same sense of amazement that the women have isn't so much that they're scared out of their pants, is that they can't believe that Jesus has been raised from the dead and that their sins have been forgiven. They were just blown away. Blown away. They were out of their senses. And overcome with just what had really happened to them. So how do we put this all together for us? What does this mean for us? What does the story of the resurrection mean for us? So I'd like to turn our attention to some of the things we've walked through. We started talking about the meeting spot. Now the meeting spot, what I want to say is this meeting point is a place where what? Where the lost are found. And there's some of you today here who are lost. And our prayer is that today is the day that you may be found. Some of us are too stubborn to admit that we're lost. and unwilling to come to a place where we can be found. This is a wonderful billboard. It says, "This year, thousands of men will die from stubbornness." And then you see what the men wrote. So our hope and prayer is that you will find Jesus Christ to be your Savior, and that your meeting point will be at His cross. As we sang earlier, His amazing grace is that Jesus would take our place, that He would bear our cross, that He would lay down His life, that we would be set free. May today be the day that you're found, and start to sing that all that Jesus has done for you. For those of us who have been found, our meeting point today is the empty tomb. That's a place where we're reminded that Jesus is reliable. He does what He says. He's dependable. He's trustworthy. One of the key themes of the Gospel of Mark is people's lack of faith. Even though Jesus had said time and time again that He would rise on the third day, the women purchased spices with an anticipation of finding a dead body. And what they found was an empty tomb. Jesus can be trusted with all that we have. So the question is, for those of us who follow Jesus, what keeps us from trusting Him the way that He desires? Some of us do not fully trust Jesus because we don't understand what He asks us to do when He says, follow Him. We come to Jesus with more of a literal sense of what He asks. So, talking about literal sense, so this cake kind of gives you a sense of what I'm talking about. We hear Jesus say things, right? And this is this cake. It says, "Happy birthday, Adam, with blue flowers." Okay? So we hear things, okay, and we take them precisely what He means. And the story that's neat in Mark chapter 10, many of you know it, the rich young ruler who asked Jesus all these, "What should I must do to do eternal life?" And Jesus begins to enumerate many of the commands, just like the cake, right? He did exactly what He said He was supposed to do. And then Jesus went for His heart. And He says, "Sell everything you have. Give it all. Give it all to Me. I want it all." And that's sometimes what we're afraid of. We're fine following a lot of the Christian things that are in the Scriptures. We're fine doing the things that the rich young ruler was doing to kind of look Christian and be Christian. But when it comes to giving it all, we're afraid. We're not willing to give up things. Our comfortable lifestyle, our jobs, our families, we're afraid Jesus is going to ask us something to give up that we don't want to do. And just like the rich young ruler turned away, we sometimes turn away from Him and don't trust Him the way we should. I know there's things in my life that I hold dear that He asked me, am I willing to give up? The second reason that we don't often trust Jesus is that we don't really feel like He's got our best interest in mind. We're unsure of what He's leading us to do, okay? So kids, this is the time. I'd like you to get out your jelly bean packs, okay? And also you're going to need the paper towel, okay? And I'll explain here in a second, okay? So this is a recent trendy game called Bean Boozled, okay? For those of you who are familiar with the game, you're already starting to there. For those of you who are not, we do have some extras I'd like to try. So if I have anybody who wants to, anybody want to give it a try? Didn't get any? Anyone else? Okay. So the way this game works, sorry, any more? We have one more here, Adam. Okay, so the way this game works is that there are jelly beans, okay, that have colors, okay? And these colors, okay, for example, there's one with yellow and brown spots. It either tastes like a banana or pencil shavings. There's a white one with white, yellow spots. It either tastes like buttered popcorn or rotten eggs. There's a blue one that either tastes like blueberry or toothpaste, and you don't know what it is. Okay, so I'd like you to open up your packet, pick one of the jelly beans, have one of your paper towels ready in case it's an unpleasant experience, okay? And on the count of three, we're going to give one a try. Now, moms and dads can try it too, okay? Okay, so pick one out, have your paper towel. Here's a paper towel. You might need this, okay? And go ahead and try one. Go ahead and try one. Okay, you can try another one if there's several in the packet, okay? Okay. Okay. Yeah, so just so we're clear, we did have earwax, vomit, boogers, moldy cheese, baby wipes, and black pepper were some of your other choices. In addition to plum, coconut, caramel corn, pear, peach. I'm losing the crowd. I know. I'm losing the crowd. All right, bring it back in. Bring it back in. I'm like a basketball coach here. Bring it back in. So how many of you, when you put that, was there a hesitation there before you put it in? There was a hesitation, right? Oftentimes, we approach the resurrected Jesus with that same hesitation. We don't know what it's going to be like to follow Jesus. We don't know what he's going to ask us to do. We don't know what he's going to ask us to give up. More importantly, we don't know what we're going to get. And it's the same experience here today, okay? Kids, there's plenty left for later, okay? So hang in there, okay? Now, what's interesting is, remember in Mark chapter 8, Peter, when Jesus told him about God's plan, about him to be killed, Peter took him inside and began to rebuke Jesus. And what did Jesus tell Peter? You do not have the mind, the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. And that's what happens. Just like Peter, we're more concerned about things in this world. Okay? We're more excited that Villanova is in the Final Four. Okay? We're more upset that the Downton Abbey seasons are over. Right? Those are the things that bother us, right? Is it wrong to enjoy college basketball? Is it wrong to enjoy some sort of, you know, British television show? No, it's not wrong, but it's where your heart is. That's what Jesus is telling Peter, okay? Where your heart is, okay? How do we deepen our trust in Jesus and see him as dependable, trustworthy, and the one who never fails, okay? Jesus spoke openly to everybody about what would happen to him. He was going to be crucified and raised from the dead. In Mark 8:31, Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and rise again after 3 days. We saw in our story today that Jesus said what he would do, and it came true. He died and rose again. What is it that Jesus has told you that you're not so sure about? What is it that Jesus is encouraging you to do in his journey with you that you're not so sure? So what I want us to do is just end with a little simple hymn that kind of walks us through how to trust Jesus more. And it's a classic hymn, "Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus." The hymn goes like this: "'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take him at his word, just to rest upon his promise, just to know thus saith the Lord." And that's when I'm going to stop midway through there. That first phrase is there, what that means is that we understand what he asked us to do. Okay? It wasn't Adam with blue flowers, but we understand he's asking for our all. Then we continue on. It says, "Jesus, Jesus, how I trust him, how I proved him o'er and o'er. Jesus, Jesus, precious Jesus, oh for grace to trust him more." And this is the way we begin to trust him. By proving him over and over again. By when we leaving here, say, you know what, Jesus, there's some things I've been holding back on. I'm afraid of what you might ask me to do or to be. And I'm willing to give it up now. All for Jesus. All for Jesus. So what I want us to do is just think about the resurrection today. Don't let the taste of strange jelly beans dominate the day, okay? But with all seriousness, see that Jesus he's reliable. He's dependable. He does what he says. And more importantly, he wants our best. And he's worth giving our all. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, we're grateful that you are reliable. As we sang earlier, because you live, we can face tomorrow. Because you live, every fear is gone. We know that you hold our lives, our futures, in your trustworthy hands. We're alive because you live. We want to have our stories join in with those stories of the women in the gospel account we read today who loved you dearly and followed you because you were reliable to them. And we thank you at the cross that the work was finished. You were buried in the ground. And today we celebrate again how you rose from the grave and how it could not contain you and how you wear the victor's crown. And we want to sing about that now, Lord, in your name.